I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports.
The worst foreign policy blunder in American history, a leading presidential historian issues a harsh assessment of the wars of President George W. Bush. That's today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Gene Edward Smith is the author of Eisenhower in War and Peace, for which he was a guest on this show. FDR, winner of the 2008 Francis Parkman Prize of the Society of American Historians. Grant, a 2002 Pulitzer Prize finalist. John Marshall, definer of a nation. And Lucius D. Clay in American Life. Been on the faculty or a visiting scholar at the University of Toronto, Marshall University, Columbia, Princeton, and Georgetown. His latest work, simply called Bush. Welcome back, Gene.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's get right off the bat. The worst foreign policy decision made by an American president. What exactly do you mean? How did he reach that nadir, I guess?
You could go back in history and try to find one that's worse. Saddam Hussein was not involved in the events of 9/11. There was no al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction. There was no reason to attack Iraq. And once Saddam Hussein was toppled, the sectarian strife erupted. And there was no ISIS under Saddam, but ISIS is a product of that. And the terror that we face today, the threat of terrorism that we face today, is directly attributable to Bush's decision to attack Iraq.
You call him uninformed, impulsive, a bit arrogant, untraveled, no foreign policy experience. That sounds awful scary, like Trump.
I really don't want to go there, if you don't mind. But I think even worse, and I would say even worse than Trump.
Wow.
Bush believed that he was God's agent here on earth to fight evil.
In fact, that was where I was going to go next. This messianic thing, this sort of personal destiny to end evil. Would you put this in the context too? Woodrow Wilson and Jimmy Carter had these streaks to them. Is this what a seemingly good streak is a dangerous thing to have in a president?
Oh, it's a terribly dangerous thing because you don't listen to anyone else. You believe that you are God's agent here, and you talk to the Lord in the evening. And he gives you instructions, and it's terrible. Carter, to some extent, but not very much. Wilson, you're quite right, suffered from that. But I don't think anyone did as much as Bush, who genuinely believed that he was God's agent and he was fighting evil. And if you do that, then the normal restraints don't apply. The guarantees in the Constitution don't apply if you're fighting evil. And this is what Bush believed, and it often took his advisors by surprise.
Let me ask you this. He did not agree to speak with you, as you put this together, in part because you'd written a negative book on his dad. Now, on his war in Iraq, which is deemed successful, why were you critical of Bush 41's Iraq war?
I was critical of it because I didn't think we had any business there. I didn't think it mattered if Saddam Hussein had taken Kuwait.
All right.
And I didn't really think it mattered at all. Maybe I should confess that Norm Schwarzkopf is a close friend of mine. We served together in the 6th Infantry Regiment in Berlin back in the late 1950s. But
well, he can't be happy with your assessment.
Well, he's dead, fortunately. But yes, I was critical of Bush. It didn't seem. And don't forget that first Bush war, the decision to go to war when Bush asked Congress to support it. It was a very narrow vote. Senator Kennedy voted against it.
Hey, you're critical of him as overreacting to 9/11. Now, prior to that, President Clinton, for instance, these kinds of acts were considered criminal in nature, yes, not war-like in nature, but it didn't seem to be working. The other part of my question is, after Pearl Harbor, we ended up rounding up Japanese and Americans and putting them in internment camps. So isn't there a bit of a history of overreaction that might be a natural result of something this big on the mainland?
Well, you're quite right that FDR was wrong to take that action after Pearl Harbor. But I don't think so. It seems to me that the activities up until that, the response to a terrorist attack up until that time had always been to take it to court. And why Bush didn't want to do that is extraordinary.
All right. One of the things in this book that is pretty stunning is Bush called himself the decider, but this book really exposes that he was incredibly the decider. For instance, both Powell and Rumsfeld were stunned when Bush decided that we were going to basically nascent build a democracy there rather than get out. That's kind of stunning.
I mean, that's a decision that makes the invasion all the worse. Rumsfeld and Powell didn't know anything about it, but Bush simply announced it on the flight deck of the Abraham Lincoln on May 1st, 2003, and they were taken totally by surprise. I think they may have erred in not making a fuss about it and in simply accepting it, but they're both seasoned administrators. They have operated at the highest level, and I guess they did what they thought was appropriate.
When we talk about war criminals or Saddam gassing his own people as he did with the Kurds, at what point do we, I mean, you would say we should not have gone in there. And, of course, it did destabilize that he was keeping together through his brutality. Mm-hmm. At what point are we, you know, doing like a sleep at the switch like Hitler in Europe versus going in and causing more problem than we could fix?
Hitler in Europe is an entirely different situation because this was aggression across national borders.
Right, right.
It's really none of our business what a country does internally. We shouldn't be messing around with that. We shouldn't be telling other countries how to live.
All right, let me ask you this. You can make a case, obviously, and you do, that his staff failed him in many ways. Condi Rice, who has a great image, it really bothered me that rather than serve as an NSC advisor forcing Bush to look at all the different options, that she sort of mind-melded with him.
Well, that's exactly right. Unlike all of her predecessors as national security advisor, Rice didn't present the president with alternatives, but tried to frame everything in a way that he would approve. That was a serious mistake, I think, on her part. I might say that the growth of the National Security Council, which has taken place in the last 30 years, really is a serious thing. The NSC was created by the 80th Congress in 1947. That's a Republican Congress, and their intent in creating it was to diminish presidential power. But the fact is that the size of the staff has grown to such an extent that it actually facilitates the president's power. So really, that act has been turned on its head, if you want to, with the National Security Council staff as large as it currently is, the president doesn't need to talk to the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense.
Did Cheney well serve Bush, or did he build too much of his own national security apparatus?
Let me put it this way. In the first year of the administration, Cheney played a very important role because Bush had not been in Washington, really. He had never held a government position in Washington. He didn't know how the situation worked, and Cheney had been chief of staff under Ford and Secretary of Defense under George Herbert Walker Bush and a member of Congress for 11 years. Cheney knew how it worked perfectly. And so that first year, as Bush was getting his feet on the ground, Cheney played a very important role. But it gradually diminished, and of course the Scooter Libby affair was a major contributor in diminishing Cheney's influence.
Now, Bush was the first MBA, when he got an MBA from Harvard. How do you assess overall his management style?
He's been criticized for using the Harvard management's style in which the chief executive simply takes what comes up to him. But don't forget, Bush had an MBA and went to Harvard. He is the only person, I believe, who was a graduate of Harvard who did not have a job offer when he graduated. He was interviewed by 53 Fortune 500 companies, and he did not receive a job offer.
That was an amazing stat. Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Biz Talk Radio Network, over 350 stations around the country. In the next segment with Gene, we're going to look back at George W. Bush's March to the Top.
To America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the YouTube America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
Hey, Bob, how's business? Is the new website helping?
Not good. I can't figure out how to get the website finished. How did you do it?
Easy. I called web.com. They built my website for free. Then they promoted it on all the search engines.
Like Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Exactly. And web.com has helped grow my business so much, I had to bring on new staff.
Call now, 1-800-535-9652. That's 1-800-535-9652.
There is no upfront charge for building the website, after which the ongoing fee applies. Rights to the website are relinquished upon cancellation unless otherwise purchased.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're back talking with presidential historian Gene Edward Smith about George W. Bush. And looking back a little bit, it just still blows me away that he was in midlife. He was the black sheep of the family. He was an alcoholic. And 15 years later, he was president. Go back a little bit to those sort of wilderness years.
Well, you're right. He was not a good student. He went to Andover and for prep school before going to university, and the dean of students at Andover told him not to bother to apply to Yale because his grades were so low he wouldn't get in. And he got in because he was a fourth-generation legacy, and Yale at that time was taking 52% of the legacy applicants. Kingman Brewster became president during George's freshman year, changed the rules, and so George's three brothers and sisters did not get in, because Brewster changed the rules. But George was a party person. He was a big man on campus in that sense, and got through Yale with, I guess, what we used to call gentlemen C's. Then was really 5 years in the wilderness back in Texas, drinking heavily and taking drugs.
By the way, you say that no stranger to prohibited substances. I haven't heard that he's ever really admitted that, right? Did you're basing that on something, I assume?
Yes. In fact, he admits it seems to me that his quotations more or less admitted. Yes.
Yeah. When he was young, he was irresponsible.
But yeah, that's right.
I've never heard what the level of drugs were. But
I think most seriously, before he went to Harvard, he was working for a program in Houston, in the black neighborhood of Houston, which dealt with black students, trying to bring them ahead, and he was there because of, apparently, in lieu of facing any charge on drug possession.
Interesting. You also said, I didn't know, he got a woman pregnant and she had an abortion?
Yes. She had a DNC, which this was before the Supreme Court legalized abortion, and Texas was one of the states that had the harshest rules, and so I think it's fair to say that women had DICs. They were called DICs, but they were essentially abortions. Yes.
Okay, so along comes Laura Welsh and conversion to being a born-again Christian. Talk about that, and how did it change the whole deal for him?
Well, I don't think Laura converted him, but you're quite right. I think he continued to drink heavily after
right.
he was married to Laura. In his book, Bush talks about that and simply believes that Billy Graham, or he states that it was Billy Graham who did it. Actually, he converted about a year sooner than that, and it was Protestant minister who was famous for carrying the cross around the world. Bush became a born-again Christian, but that wasn't what sobered him up. He continued to drink as a born-again Christian, and it was after his 40th birthday party out in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor Hotel that he woke up with a terrible hangover. His father was getting ready to run for president in 1988, and this was 2 years before in 86, and it was Bush didn't want to embarrass his father, and so he resolved that the next morning to stop drinking, which he did. He's been very faithful at that. Laura, in her memoir, said, well, it was because he got the bill for the last night's celebration. But, yes, he did stop drinking, and he stopped drinking overnight.
Pretty amazing. Talk about, if you put him on the couch for a bit, he seems like he's a very rigid guy. He's fanatically wanting to be on time, the opposite of Clinton. You say that there's really in there, it's sort of a deep fear of losing control?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think absolutely there's a fear of losing control, which is why everything is so tightly regulated. But it's that belief in God, which is really the most serious concern, and had the largest influence on him, I think.
Now, people say that he's a people smart guy, not a book smart guy, or that he's not dumb, but he's intellectually lazy. Where do you put his brain power at?
Well, I think both of those assessments are correct. He doesn't know a lot about detail, and he is essentially unwilling to learn. He really didn't know that Iraq is a country of three prominent religions who don't really get along with each other, and he doesn't understand the nuances of what he's doing. Let me give you another example of that. Shortly after he took office in May of 2001, the South Korean president came to Washington hoping to put the final seal on a deal with North Korea, which had been negotiated by South Korea and the Clinton administration. Madeleine Albright, Clinton's Secretary of State, had been in Pyongyang in December of 2000. And under this deal, North Korea and the United States were going to give economic assistance to North Korea, in return for which North Korea was going to abandon its nuclear program. And Bush unilaterally, without talking to anyone, simply said, no, we're not going to do that because the North Koreans are evil. You may recall, that's when Colin Powell was caught off base. When Powell had spoke to reporters before meeting the South Korean president, said we're going to continue with these negotiations, and he was called up short when Bush unilaterally changed his mind. It's that type of approaching decisions without studying them that's disconcerting.
Just briefly, one more on the couch. He went to Yale. He was in the Guard. He went to Texas Entrepreneur. He followed his father almost lockstep. Is there this big competition thing between them, or is that blown up?
Oh, I think that's blown up. I don't think there's a competition thing. I think both his father and mother were hoping that Jeb would be the one who went into politics.
Yeah.
But you're in that 1994 election, after George W. had been defeated by Clinton in 92, in the 1994 election, Jeb ran for governor of Florida and was favored to win over the Democratic incumbent. And George ran against Ann Richards in Texas, and Ann Richards was favored to win, and both elections were upsets. Jeb lost, and George won. And I think from that point on, he became the president's successor.
This is Talk with Jim Campbell. We will be next and look at more detail into those disastrous wars.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
How deep in debt are you? $10,000? $15,000? Maybe even more? And every day that goes by, you know what happens. Your debt gets larger and larger and larger. Well, if you've had it with your mushrooming debt problem and the stress it is causing you, make this free call today to the Debt Solutions Network. One quick no-obligation call is all it takes for one of our partner companies to show you how they can help you get out of debt. So if you have $10,000 or more in combined debt and you want to learn how you can solve it, make this free, no-obligation call now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035.
If you are in serious debt, you have to get out of it and fast. Call my friends at the Debt Solutions Network now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035. Call us 24/7. 800-814-5035.
Say hello to John. John dreamed of building a successful business and retiring to an exotic island in the Caribbean. He dreamed about his sales soaring and all the money that would be flowing in. He dreamed of hiring a sales team and expanding his company. Well, sadly, that dream fell apart when his bank turned down his business loan. Now John is not dreaming about going to the Caribbean anymore. He's driving around in an old beat-up pickup truck. If you need money to grow your business to new heights so you can reach your dreams, don't let the bank hold you down. You need to call Merchant Advance Express today. We can help you get qualified for up to $250,000 to grow your business any way you want. Call now to learn more. Call 800-503-3735, 800-503-3735, 800-503-3735. That's 800-503-3735.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Back with Gene Edward Smith. He's got a new book out called Bush, about Bush 43. And I guess we'll talk about these wars in a little bit more detail. In the first one, the Afghanistan war, strikes nobody has been able to win there in 1,000 years. Is that sort of a lost cause? They're so backward starting off?
Yes. Why we went in there is again something that I think that's questionable. But Bush was determined to go in, and we went in. And before everything was settled, he had decided to go into Iraq, and so our efforts there were sort of truncated.
Okay, you talk about him sort of sidestepping everybody in the chain of command and, making the decisions. The Vulcans who were sort of brought in, Wolfowitz, Scooter Libby, those folks, they had a plan to go do this stuff in the Middle East. So how does it come together with Bush doing his own thing?
I think Bush did his own thing, and these people provided the rationale for it.
Okay.
These people, Wolfowitz and Scooter Libby, provided the explanation and the rationale for doing so. They were not the launchers of the plan, but they were perfectly happy to implement it and explained it.
If the Iraq war was the biggest blunder in American presidential history, what about the decisions of Paul Bremer to oust the Baathists, to disband the army, and delay the handover?
Well, yes. Well, you're quite right. That contributed to it. But don't forget, Bremer would not have been there if Bush had not, on the flight deck of the Abraham Lincoln, changed the plan from just going in.
Yep.
Getting rid of Saddam Hussein and getting out within 90 days. I mean, the army, that's what the army was working on. They had a general, Jay Garner, who was there in the Office of Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance. And they were perfectly prepared to turn Iraq over back to the Iraqis. And getting out, and that's what the military planned for.
In fact, what I was saying was, if that was the worst foreign policy blunder, was that particular decision the worst decision within that blunder, or was there something worse?
I think Bush's decision on Abraham Lincoln is the worst, and Bremer's decision simply followed from that.
Okay. How about the surge now? This comes out in the book more clearly than I'd known, too, which is that really the surge, George Bush on a force of will got that through. Nobody in the chain of command, nobody in the Baker Commission, nobody wanted to do that.
Well, you're right. No one did want to do it, and Bush did it. And in and of itself, it was not really the decisive factor bringing order back to Iraq. It contributed, but the Anbar awakening, where the Sunni leaders of Anbar province mm-hmm. decided they didn't want to have anything to do with ISIS, the fact that Muqtada al-Sadr, the Shiite leader, ordered his Mahdi army to stand down, and The general segregation that had taken place in Iraq between Sunnis and Shiites, all of those were probably more important than the surge itself. But the surge helped.
All right, one more thing before we want to get to some of his accomplishments or on the positive side of the ledger. The enhanced interrogation techniques, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, what do you attach to all of that?
Well, again, it's that idea that you're fighting the forces of evil, and as a result, that no holes are barred. And this was the position that Bush took. Now, on Abu Ghraib, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we all saw those horrible pictures, and we thought that this was done by a military police company from Cumberland, Maryland, who didn't really know what they were doing. But the fact is, and the four military investigations have pointed this out, the guards were encouraged to take this action by the CIA and military intelligence prior to these people being interrogated. They wanted to break their will before they were interrogated. And four military investigations, the first by a General Taguba, pointed that out. So this wasn't something that the guards did on their own.
Okay, let's switch over now to what you think some of the we'll go through some of these. But first, what's the number one accomplishment on the plus side of the Bush administration?
Oh, I think most importantly, I think, is handling of the 2008 economic downturn. I think that unlike foreign policy and the military, this time he listened to Hank Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, and Ben Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve, and against all of his instincts, followed their advice and reined in the downturn. So I think that's clearly the most important success that he had.
And it's interesting. He handled it the exact opposite of the way he ran the wars, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And he handled it in such just about every action he took in that crisis was contrary to what he believed, but he realized that he was over his head, and was prepared to take Paulson and Bernanke's recommendation, and so he did.
Let me ask you about the prescription drug program, because yes. You list that as a plus, obviously. I have a problem that it was unfunded, though.
Well, I guess that is a problem, and I guess it has created problems in that respect. But, I'm 83 years old. I'm a beneficiary. So I'm not too critical of that. And also, if you're looking at other achievements,
yes,
No Child Left Behind is probably a major achievement. I mean, there are problems with it. There are difficulties with it. And it's been sort of dismantled. But it did recognize the need to apply standards to public education.
Yeah, I think it was a bold act at the time. Also, yeah. You got to give him credit, particularly in this current environment that we're going through on immigration reform. He was in favor of trying to get something done.
I think that's maybe Bush's strongest area, perhaps because Bush is not prejudiced against Latinos. You know, his famous comment during the campaign that family values don't end at the Rio Grande. Bush has always been, and as a governor of Texas, of course, has always been strongly in favor of regularizing the Latino situation here.
You know, I did not know, or I'd forgotten about the SALT agreement that he got with Vladimir Putin. Talk about that.
Well, yes, he and that is another major achievement that he and Putin got along very well in the beginning, and they agreed to cut the amount of the nuclear arsenal that each country maintains, and they really have cut it by about two-thirds. This is a very major achievement, and Bush deserves great credit for that.
Well, let me ask you about that in the sense that he's got this people smarts he's given credit for, but he made that famous comment that he could sense the soul of Putin like he was some kind of a good guy.
Well, their discussion, yes, that's quite right. Their discussions sort of digressed when they met there in Yugoslavia the first time. Their discussion digressed sort of into religious matters, and for Bush, that was very important.
The magic button, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the and you give a lot of credit for this too? I think that his move to fight AIDS in Africa.
That has no domestic impact, but I think that's really a very important achievement of Bush. But Bush really led the fight against AIDS, and I think is largely responsible for having turned the corner on what was when he took office, almost an uncontrollable situation in Africa, with their considering that if something wasn't done, 100 million people were going to die of AIDS, and Bush stepped in, and pressed it relentlessly. The United States spent well over $50 billion to fight AIDS, and Bush, after leaving office, continues to be involved in that fight, one of his daughters is involved in it as well, and I think that's a commendable thing.
We'll be back for our final national segment assessing the presidency of George W. Bush.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC32.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help. I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares.
Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares.
Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And we're talking with the author of Presidential Biographies on FDR, Eisenhower, now Bush 43. That's Gene Edward Smith. Put you on the spot a little bit. Overall, where would you rank W amongst the presidents? Put it in a quadrant if you want to make it easier. Where would you put him today?
Well, I would put him in the bottom quadrant, but I wouldn't put him last by any means.
Okay.
I think Herbert Hoover has that locked up. Let me also say, after leaving office, I think Bush has been exemplary as an ex-president. He doesn't miss the presidency. And I think he doesn't take any part of political issues. I think he's been commendable as an ex-president.
I think he's a very high-character guy, in fact. He comes across.
Well, I think that's true.
This thing, the second inaugural address, where he basically was going to say that we were going to bring freedom to the whole world, or it's the Almighty's gift, the Almighty's gift. That's pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes, that is exactly right, and that is a reflection of his view that he announced on the flight deck of the Abraham Lincoln.
Let's compare for a second here. You think that there might be an advantage to have been had a less assertive president at that time, and Obama comes to mind. He often has this lead from behind image, but the quagmire in the Middle East, has it gotten any better under a less assertive, less invasive approach under Obama? Has it really made a difference?
The situation is out of control because of Bush's actions.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam and Gaddafi, dictators though they were, kept things under control. Once we removed, say, those two, we created a problem, a continuing problem, that is very difficult to correct.
In the long run, if the transformation to democracy in Iraq, and it ends up taking a quarter century instead of the 60 days we were hoping, and the Mideast fundamentally transforms, might the history give George W. Bush a lot of credit then?
I think you're being very optimistic to assume that that is going to happen.
Sounds like it, yet the way things are going today.
I think you're being very optimistic to assume that is going to happen. I mean, so long as a dictator doesn't bother his neighbors, I don't think it's any of our business.
It's hard to bite that off when you see that Assad in Syria is not only gassing and killing its own people, but they're now spreading, including bad guys, migrants to Europe. So I don't know what the answer to there is, too. Nobody's figured out how to fix that. Perry, let's compare Clinton and Bush for a second on decision-making. Everybody talked about Clinton's approach being nothing but chaos, and nothing ran on time, and everything was over-debated, and Bush was the trains ran on time. It was, concrete, short, bingo, the decider. But Clinton's way maybe more successful, or does it matter?
It may be more successful because if you reflect on things sufficiently, your chances of making a mistake are much less. Whereas if you keep the trains running on time, you may be making wrong decisions.
We come out of Vietnam. George W. Bush was focused on not making the same mistakes. Do we end up in the same position as in Vietnam, a failure of nation building or what have you?
Well, I think it's much worse than Vietnam, because in Vietnam, although we lost over 50,000 lives, nothing further has happened.
Moving back to, domestically now, the ownership society was a big vision of his in increasing homeownership, and then, of course, we had the financial crash, and he wanted to privatize Social Security. Do we view those as failed efforts or lucky that they didn't happen?
Well, I think the failed effort on Social Security, that really didn't get off the ground. That was his view, but the Democrats in Congress and sufficient Republicans in Congress were not interested in privatizing it, and so that was a dead horse when it arrived. The ownership society, which Bush articulated, maybe was a contributor to the downturn in 2008. For example, in subprime mortgages, in 1994, there were only 5% of the mortgages were subprime. By 2006, we're dealing with 20% that were subprime. And a subprime mortgage isn't necessarily always to someone with low income. I mean, sometimes high-income people have subprime mortgages, depending on the characteristics of the mortgage and their own ability.
I want to ask you something, by the way, unrelated to this, that's very interesting to me. In on David Petraeus, you talk about that he was possibly a candidate to be the president of Princeton and then might use the Eisenhower route from university to White House when he was sidelined by the scandal. But he asked you about Kay Summersby and Ike's scandal. Talk a little bit about it.
I'm in Washington at Georgetown, and I get an email message from Petraeus inviting me for lunch or for dinner at the Cosmos Club. And so I meet him there, and after the first course is over, he wanted to talk about how Ike handled the Kay Summersby affair. Kay Summersby was Ike's very close friend for 3 years during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And when the war was over, when Ike came back to the United States in October of 45, he washed his hands of her. And so Petraeus wanted to know how Ike handled it and so forth. And the reason for his concern is because there was a very large group of alumni at Princeton who were pressing Petraeus to become president of Princeton, pressing for Petraeus to become president of Princeton, and so that as president of Princeton, just as Ike was president of Columbia, he would be able to contest the Republican nomination. And let me say two things. If you look at the way the Republican nomination meant, maybe that wouldn't have been such a bad thing. But Jill Kelly, who was Petraeus' friend down in
Florida,
has written a book recently called Collateral Damage, Petraeus' Power in the Politics, and so forth. And on page 167, she reprints an email she sent to him, and she says, a lot you should be aware of. I think you should take the job at Princeton. This is an email that she sent to him while he was still head of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
After the Paula Bradwell scandal broke, of course, the chance that he would be president of Princeton were less than zero.
Do you think he has ambitions now to try to revive things?
Well, I'm sure he has ambitions to try to revise things, but I think it's unrevivable.
Unrealistic, yeah. What areas are you critical of him that he turned a blind eye to? I know that environmental is one.
He was not interested really in the environment, which is a difficulty, but I think if it had not been for the Iraq War, I think Bush would go down as a much better president. I think he would be maybe in the top half rather than in the bottom quarter.
Really?
Well, all of these problems really relate to the Iraq War. Now, I guess there's one other problem, and that's the tax cut that he pressed as soon as he took office. We had run a budget surplus for 3.5 years under Clinton, and Clinton had always used the budget surplus to pay down the debt.
Yes.
And Bush campaigned on the fact that we should not be doing that. We should be returning the money to each individual. It's your money, he famously said. At the time, both Paul O'Neill, the Secretary of Treasury, and Greenspan, head of the Federal Reserve, both wanted triggers in the tax cut so that if the budget surplus ended, the tax cut would end as well. And Bush wouldn't do that. He signed the tax cut in June, and beginning in July of 2001, the United States was deficit financing from there on.
Well, we had a great hour. It's a searing look back at the disastrous, in the end, wars of George W. Bush. Thanks to historian Gene Edward Smith. His book is Bush. It's just out. It's published by Simon & Schuster. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. You can get our podcast at iTunes. Search Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks again to Gene Edward Smith for his second appearance on our show. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.